There are plenty of opportunities to hear music in most American homes today. It usually comes from top 40, golden oldies, or all-country stations on the radio, from cassette or compact disc, or from the latest videos on MTV. For the Cleveland family of Brant Lake in the southern Adirondack Mountains north of Albany, music at home has always been different. They sing. For several generations, they have passed songs along from their Celtic ancestors, singing alone or to and with each other, anytime and most of the time.
Yeah, we fight over who gets to sing, you know. Good people all from far and near, a dreadful story you will hear. It is concerning.
The tradition of singing for Jim Cleveland and his daughter Colleen is well established. To them, music is just a natural part of life. Singing is unremarkable, and they do it unselfconsciously. Little did they know that their family's repertoire was a treasure trove.
We had no idea what a child ballad was, you know. It's a song sung by a child until after she talked to some of the folklorists and found out that child was a collector. And
they were just songs.
It wasn't until the folklorists got a hold of it that they found out that, all right, it's not just a song.
Both Jim and Colleen grew up on the hundreds of different melodies and lyrics sung by aunts and uncles, and especially Jim's mother, Sarah Cleveland. Folk song scholars came to describe her as one of the best traditional ballad singers of her generation in America. Welcome to Meet the Masters. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, your host for this series of conversations with traditional artists from the northern region of New York State, the North Country. Each individual or community group in this series has been acknowledged as Masters of Their Art by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York, an organization dedicated to the preservation and presentation of local folk culture. All these artists have been honored with the North Country Heritage Award and are well-known institutions in their own corners of the region, admired and respected for who they are and what they do. From old Irish and Scottish stock firmly replanted in the Adirondack Hills, Jim Cleveland spent his adult life as an iron worker on bridges and skyscrapers. In the mid-1960s, Jim and his wife Phyllis went to the Cosmic Coffee House in nearby Lake George to hear some music. By that time, a revival of interest in folk songs of all kinds was the rage in America. The music the Clevelands was hearing sounded familiar, and Jim began to wonder if the notebooks full of old songs which his mother kept might interest some of the performers.
We never thought nothing about it till, I don't know, her and I got going to the Cosmic Coffee House down in Lake George. That was the first one that was around here. I think that was before Cafe Lena even, wasn't it? Or maybe that was going too at the same time.
Late 50s.
But we ended up there, and that's where I first met the Beers. A few other people up there, some good ones we used to see. I remember, who the hell was that? Reverend Gary Davis.
Oh, Dave Van Ronk was there.
Dave Van Ronk, yeah.
There were a lot of different artists there at that time.
And they got me interested. And when I was there at the Beers, I brought the books up to show them. And they said, got looking at them and telling them how my mother was singing them. She said, get a hold of Sandy Payton. So when Sandy come down here to Saratoga, I brought the books down and showed them to him. Well, I think it was the next day he was right up to my mother's house, and she sang a few songs for him. And when he found out she sang that...
It had to be Queen Jane.
Queen Jane.
Yeah.
Oh, never a version of that discovered in this country. She had the only version that's ever been found in this country of the King's Daughter, Lady Jean. So right away he had her down there for, 6-7 weeks, I think. And he was recording everything she had.
Yeah, he told me later, he says he wasn't sure if it wasn't a joke or not that some of his kids had set up this little old lady with some songs and stuff to play a hoax on him and see if they could pull one over on him. And he said after he listened to her sing for about 3 or 4 hours straight, he decided it wasn't any hoax and that he had something.
Queen Jane.
Jane sat at her window one day, sewing a silken seam. She looked out at the merry green woods and saw the green tree. And saw the green tree. She dropped her thimble at her heel, and her needle at her toe, and away she ran to the merry green wood to gather nuts and sow, to gather nuts and sow.
Within a year of first meeting Sandy Payton, she recorded an album of her songs for Folk Legacy and was invited to perform at several colleges and at music festivals in Newport, Philadelphia, and at the Smithsonian Festival of American Folklife. At 60, Sarah found this attention surprising, even amusing, for she had been singing these songs since she was a little girl and had made them a daily part of Jim's growing up.
Oh, usually when she's working around the house, or sometimes we'd get her down, my mother, to play the piano and sing a lot of songs where she was nothing else to do, or a lot of times when the power would go out, you couldn't play the radio or television here, why? She'd go and play the piano and sing. My mother would always be singing in the car when we'd be traveling back up home. When we were out of state, we'd come home to visit. Why, she'd always be singing while you're driving. That's where I did all my singing, was driving when I was up by myself. I might not be singing out loud, but the songs would be going through my head. So you'll learn the songs that way.
I'm almost the same way Dad is. Grandma lived with us, and me being the youngest out of all the five kids, I guess I was an afterthought, and I spent a great deal of time with her because Dad and Mom were usually working. And also being the youngest, I was, I guess, privy to go to all the festivals and things when they were taking her. So I got, you know, I got hit with it at an early age, too. I think I started singing when I was 4 or 5. And was on, I don't know, someplace we have a picture of me on stage at Fox Hollow Folk Festival with a dulcimer, and I think that's before I went to kindergarten. So I probably got about the same upbringing with it. It's that's what I always heard. I never listened to anything else until I think I was in high school or junior high. It was always folk music and mostly Grandma singing around the house. A while when I was in my teens that I kind of didn't do it, and I wish now that I had spent more time learning them from her. So I've been doing a lot of listening to whatever tape I can find of her, and so whatever songs that are on those are the ones that I learn, and I've been sort of trying to concentrate on the ones that are kind of specific to the family that really nobody else sings. And most of those I seem to find are the older songs, or the ones with unusual melodies, that I like the old modal tunes. And I really don't know much about music. I have no idea what key anything is in or what key I sing in. I just open my mouth and sing, usually. But this song is Come All Ye Maidens, and it's got just an odd tune. You know, it's an old, eerie-sounding tune, and I think those are the ones I'm drawn to more than anything else. Come all ye maidens, I pray, take warning.
treat young men. They are like the stars in a summer's morning. Daylight approaching, they are all gone. They will sit and tell you fine, pleasant stories, and vow and swear that they love you true. But that is all for to ruin your glory, and that's the love that they have for you.
It's got just an odd sound to it. I sang it in front of Norman Kennedy, who is a ballad singer, and he's originally from Aberdeen, Scotland. And he said he had heard the same tune in the Outer Hebrides with Gaelic words to it. So it's an old, old tune. And those are the ones that I'm kind of drawn to, more than any.
The songs Sarah got from her mother were mostly from Ireland, Scotland, and England, but she also learned from other family members, Jim Cleveland.
Most of my ma's songs are favorites of mine, and I had some that I learned from my uncles. We had the hobo songs. We lived down there, it was right down, not too far from the house there. The hobos had a jungle, and they used to come up to my grandmother's house because they were short of a meal or something there. She must have had a signal on that gatepost somehow. And they'd come up, and my uncle learned something from them. But most of the songs my mother had, she collected from her mother, her father, and her friend's father, Barney Hart. They come from Ireland, and he was quite, there were quite a good bunch of singers, too. Learned some from him.
Sarah Cleveland was not just devoted to remembering old melodies and lyrics. Her mother had stressed that there were proper ways to sing some of the songs.
I mean, Grandma would sit down with some songs at the piano and play the piano and sing some songs, but a lot of the older ballads that she learned from her mother, I guess the story was that her mother found her sitting at the piano one day taking some of these old ballads and dressing them up the way her cousin did with all the 1920s, you know, parlor-type songs, and basically told her that if she was going to sing her songs, to sing them the right way or don't sing them at all. And that put the end to her dressing up the old ballads with the piano.
She took her collecting a step farther and started, as a teenager, to write down the songs that her mother had known.
And then it kind of blossomed from there into what she and her cousin, I guess, sat down and started collecting songs from everybody around, like the Hart family and from Grandma's mother and from her father, too. And kind of that's what you would find, would be boxes and boxes full of papers with songs handwritten out on them. And after a while, she got where she'd try and write the tunes down on them, too, and try to figure it out so that you could kind of follow it if you knew what you were doing to read music. She was sort of a self-taught piano player and musician of sorts, but never had any real formal training, so it was kind of, you know, she'd try to put down the basics as best she can. She got to the point after a while where she would write on the top of each paper who she had gotten the song from. So you'll find, you know, a paper from Mom or from Pop or, you know, from Raymond or Uncle Bobby or whatever.
These were later organized into notebooks, some of which Jim took to show Sandy Payton at the Cosmic Coffee House. There were over 900 tunes in all, and that included quite a variety of song types.
Some of the ones you separate them, like maybe cowboy songs that I learned and murder ballads.
She had a lot of some, like tragedy ballads, too. For
any tragedies, you know, because they used to make anything happen years ago, why they'd make a song about it. But around 1926, they had a song out about Floyd Collins, the fellow that was died in the cave there when now in Kentucky, how they tried to get him out. And all your railroad train wrecks, they always seem to have a song about that. And there's some she had written down, like the wreck of the S-51, a submarine disaster, that I've never heard anybody sing. Mine Disasters, Mines of Irvingdale.
What, the Great Milwaukee Fire?
Milwaukee Fire. That goes back to the 1860s.
There were a few, like, Irish immigration songs that she would learn, you know, from neighbors and things around her, from her father, I guess. Some of the, you know, like, parlor-type songs of that time. And not too many, really, love songs.
My wife's sister asked my mother one time, how come all the songs from Ireland were sad? Well, my mother told her, geez, they never had too much to be happy about when the English got done with them.
So what I hear, the Irish are a backwards people. All their wars are happy and their songs are sad. So. There were more murder ballads or lost loves or whatever. A few hymns. Well, he likes to sing
like
the murder ballads with the gory lyrics.
Oh, yeah. The gory murder ballads. Of course, I've picked up other songs too, you know, traveling all around. And you've heard the chorus of a song there that in Treasure Island that Stevenson wrote. The Pirates had a chorus of 15 men on a dead man's chest, yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum. I would like to find out where it came from, whether it was one that Stevenson wrote himself, because he was quite a poet, so maybe it was a poem that he had.
It's got terrible gory lyrics to it.
It ain't that bad.
Bad enough.
15 men on a dead man's chest. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum. Drink and a devil, head on for the rest. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum. The captain lay with his head in gore. The scullion's axe his head had sure. And the scullion he was stabbed times four. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum. 'Twas a cutlass swipe, or an ounce of lead, or a gaping hole in a battered head, and a scupper's glut all rotting red. And there they lay to the sodden skies, dripped down in their of staring eyes, all bloody and contrary wise. Yo ho ho, and a bottle of rum.
Isn't
I've never heard anybody sing it, but where it came from, I mean, was.
Jim and Colleen have learned lots about some of their centuries-old songs. Sometimes familiar tunes are recycled and used for entirely different topics. They found that other songs migrated to different parts of the country, where some of the lyrics were changed to refer to local places or people.
A lot of them are like the woodsman songs you have up here, you know, that of course, they go with most any place they did logging. I guess that's where the song originated, according to whoever sings it.
Yeah, you just take the one town out and plug in a local town and take the names out and plug in local names.
How about James MacDonald? That happened in Ireland about 1860. He killed some girl by the name of Annie O'Brien.
That's another one of the ones where they kind of took the place out and put in whatever place seemed to be in the original. I guess they put him in Longford Jail. And in Vermont, they put him in St. Albans Jail. And in New York State, it's in Auburn Jail.
Oh, there's a lot of different songs there that'll have the same melody. Like a lot of people know the Old Reckon 97. There's another song, I don't know whether it's before that one or after that. What is a ship that never returned? The same melody. On a summer's day when the waves were rippled by a softly sighing breeze, did a ship set sail with a cargo laden for a port beyond the seas. There were fond farewells, that were loving signals while a form could be discerned. But they little knew 'twas a solemn parting for the ship that never returned. It never returned. It never returned. His fate is yet unlearned. Though for years and years there were fond ones watching for the ship that never returned. But that's the same melody as Record of 97, but which one was the first?
And you can take it one step further, and the Kingston Trio did Charlie and the MTA, and it's got the same tune.
With that one melody.
I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald, and you're listening to Meet the Masters. Today's program features the Cleveland family and their tradition of collecting and singing ballads. Now in his 70s, Jim seldom performs anymore because of his poor health. Colleen, in her late 30s, keeps exploring her own relationship with the family's music. She sings, mostly at ballad workshops and festivals, where, like her grandmother, she swaps songs with others.
Where do I collect tunes? Anywhere and everywhere. Tunes, I listen to them off tapes and stuff. I end up going to folk festivals or there's a whole sort of a subculture of ballad singers along the eastern coast, and we periodically get together for weekends and do nothing but eat and sing for 72 hours at a stretch. And I learn songs from that. A lot of times I tape them and do that. There's the weekend getaway from the Folk Society of Greater Washington, which, you know, we end up in the Chesapeake Bay area with 150 singers and musicians, and it's very informal, a few workshops and this and that, but it's sit down and listen to people sing. I've gone to some ballad weekends and a few get-togethers with a lot of singers, and my songs or grandma's songs are kind of like nobody else knows them, and I'm finding out that's kind of unusual. Usually when somebody sits down and starts to sing, everybody else can join in on it or join in on the chorus, and when I would sit down and start to sing, everybody would look at me, and because nobody else knew it.
Colleen finds herself in the interesting position of having a wealth of material that most of the other singers know little about. She has not adopted this repertoire. It's simply her legacy.
A lot of people, when I go to talk to them, it's like, well, where'd you get that song from? And they said, oh, I got it off a book, or I got it out of this album, or, you know. The first time I went to the Washington Getaway, there was one workshop I was doing on murder ballads. And I was going to sing James McDonald, which is a murder ballad, and I couldn't for the life of me remember the last verse. So I'm frantically on the phone to him, calling him up, going, put Dad on the phone, I need the last verse to James McDonald. And nobody else, you know, everybody else was, what are you doing? I said, I'm getting the last verse to this song, wait a minute. So it is unusual.
Although she works with folklorists or others connected to the commercializing of folk music, neither she nor her father have been inclined to merchandise their music or themselves.
It's kind of more, you know, if somebody asks you to sing, it's usually, sure, we'll go sing. Instead of being like a performer who makes his living at it, you don't go out and market yourself. It's the local BPW calls you up to go sing a song or two, you do it. Or what, we had a fundraiser for one of the neighboring town firemen. Dad and I went down and sang a few songs, and it's, you know, it's more if somebody asks you to sing, you do it, but, you know, we don't have a promo kit. We don't know what a promo kit is.
Perhaps Colleen is most interested in preserving the songs of her family. More than 20 years after Sarah Cleveland recorded 3 albums for Folk Legacy and Philo Records, Colleen initiated a recording project that has turned into a family venture. The CD includes a variety of old songs performed by Jim, Colleen, and most exciting to them, Colleen's teenage nephew, James.
Teaching James. Yeah. That's, you know, a major thing to have another generation that developed an interest in the songs and has the voice and the range to sing it, too. You know, this is an 18-year-old kid and has been traveling around with me to all the festivals and stuff and getting up on stage and singing and is pretty intent on learning the songs. I think he got hooked on it when we went out and got the Tony Award. I think that was when he first realized that well, wait a minute, there's something special here that maybe I'm interested in. Because I don't think he had really heard Dad or I sing that much until then. And then I think it was after that Jamie started thinking about it. And he's always been interested in music. He had his own DJ business from the time he was 14 on. But sort of got hooked into that sound and realized that we had something that not anybody else had. So it is unusual. And I think it's unusual to learn them the way that we do, because we'll sit down either with a tape or when I'm teaching James, I mean, we sit down here in the kitchen and, all right, sing this. And it's like, no, 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 that's not it. You know, this is the tune, sing it this way. I'm trying to push the tunes into his head.
Hunting went one day, until they came to the rise of sun as they were on their way. The Englishman says it's the rising sun, the Scotsman he says nay. The jabber says pat is a roll of cheese, but none of it rolls this way. Three men they went a hunting went one day, until they came to a hedgehog as they were on their way. The Englishman says it's a hedgehog, the Scotsman he says nay. The jabber says pat is a pincushion with a pin stuck in the wrong way. Three men they went a hunting went one day, until they came to a hole in the hedge as they were on their way. The Englishman says it's a hole in the hedge, the Scotsman he says nay. The jabber says pat is the gate to hell, let us all run away. Three men they went a hunting went one day, until they came to a horned owl as they were on their way. The Englishman says it's a horned owl, the Scotsman he says nay. The jabber says pat is the devil himself.
And then they all ran away.
For the time being, at least, Colleen continues to sing as a hobby. Well, hobby isn't exactly the right word. Like her grandmother and her father, singing fills her life.
I mean, you're always singing. I'm always singing without realizing that I'm doing it. Because I'll be working in somebody's house and hanging paper or painting or doing whatever and be wailing away on a song and not realize I'm doing it until somebody comes in and says, oh, it sounds really good. And then it's like, oh, God, I'm singing again. I didn't realize anybody could hear me. Oh, no.
Or is the rivers we run our logs through.
You have been listening to Colleen and Jim Cleveland, traditional ballad singers, on Meet the Masters, Conversations with Traditional North Country Artists. Our series is produced by Traditional Arts in Upstate New York. The series is written and produced by Varick Chittenden and Lamar Bliss. Interviews were conducted by Varick Chittenden and Jamie Marrera, with audio engineering by Lamar Bliss in the studios of North Country Public Radio. Special thanks to the Clevelands for use of their personal recordings. The series is supported by a grant from the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund Community Folklife Program, administered by the Fund for Folk Culture and underwritten by the Lila Wallace Reader's Digest Fund. Research and field recordings were supported by the Sweetgrass Foundation. I'm Kathleen Fitzgerald.